the Swole Patrol podcast. Swole Patrol, calling all members of the Swole Patrol. It is the Swole Patrol podcast. Oh, yes, yes, yes. With me, Mike Hathaway, and Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Ah, it's fantastic.
Welcome to the greatest health and fitness podcast in the world. Not even open for debate. The only podcast that isn't trying to push supplements on you or get you injured. Just the pursuit of health and fitness as a lifestyle. Dr. Drew Pinsky here, board-certified physician.
Now, we got to establish ourselves as one of the greatest. We're declaring it today.
No, it's been established. Yeah.
Mike Catherwood has been on my ass for, what's today? Today's like, about 4 years to do this podcast, and now here we are. We're finally doing it.
Every second that we're not doing something for money, you and I are talking about lifting weights and diet.
Or
yeah.
You're sending me horrible texts and talking
or
about
I'm sending you inside out asshole. It's one of the two. Dr.
And,
Drew.
And you're showing me hot women too. You send me those texts. You mix those
That's
in.
That's a good point, Dr.
It's just
Drew.
His weird reinforcing. Let me, reinforces the rat so he keeps coming around and doesn't fully jump out of the cage.
Let me give you a good rundown percentage-wise of what Dr. Drew and I do in our free time. 25% inside out asshole. 16% 16% Victoria's Secret model, and then the rest, it's all rest, you know, lifting weights and diet.
Yeah. Introduce our guest, speaking of that.
He is the man who is known probably best for his documentary film, Bigger, Stronger, Faster, but also a filmmaker who has made excellent, excellent documentaries in the world of athletics and fitness, including Prescription Thugs. What's the one about parents?
Trophy Kids.
Trophy Kids. That's a great one as well. I'm talking about Chris Borbell at Big Strong Fast on Twitter and Instagram. How are you, my friend?
Good. How you guys doing?
I saw an Arnold documentary this week, and I don't know who did it, but I thought of you when I watched that.
Which?
It was it's on Netflix. Not like Super
Born Strong.
Born Strong.
Oh, Born Strong. So Born Strong, yeah, that's about the world's strongest man.
Yeah, that wasn't you, though, huh?
It wasn't me. Actually, it actually was me. That was my idea.
I figured.
And that production company, I should actually sue them because they took my idea and said, this is a great idea, and they went and did it on their own. Yeah. I have a lot of documentation of that. But anyway, that's a subject matter that I'm really interested in, the world's strongest man competitors. So I actually enjoyed the documentary.
I think you could break it down and follow each one of those guys and do a whole series.
I think we're actually going to do that. Yeah. So my brother, his company Slingshot, sponsors Brian Shaw, who is the four-time world's strongest man.
He's the big, tall
dude. He's the American. The American of the group.
Yeah, he's 6'8", 420. And I think we're going to follow him this year as he goes to get his fifth title. So we're going to
I liked in that documentary particularly, after you struggle with these guys all the way through the Arnold event, then you realize, oh, my God, they open up. There's a whole other world. There's other worlds of this out there that I'm interested in. I thought,
well, they have to become the Lithuanian champion, the European champion.
Well, and then there's the this lift and the that lift and all these different
kinds. Yeah, there's all sorts of specialty lifts.
Right,
you know,
right.
Within
the throwing the willy over the
– For example, Eddie Hall, he deadlifted 1,102 pounds. And
so do I.
Yeah, and that was just crazy to watch, you know, to see 10,000 people in England. Like, you never see 10,000 people for a lifting event. But now lifting has become more popular. I think the CrossFit movement was a big part of that.
Yeah. CrossFit.
Yeah.
Well, I do. I think that CrossFit has been the biggest blessing and curse to the fitness world as a whole, probably ever. And let me tell you why. One, it's gotten guys who are already kind of interested, and I do say guys, I mean specifically men, guys who are already interested in health and fitness, it's turned them into complete assholes.
Why?
Because of the whole kind of CrossFit world is very cult-like and
grow
shit-heady.
A beard and get a man bun.
And they wear stupid clothes and they wear stupid bandages and
web shoes and stuff. Yeah.
And web shoes and all that paleo nonsense, caveman, you know, shitheadery.
There's a lot of stuff to not like about it.
But it's gotten the guy who isn't necessarily like the average kind of just day trader who just normally would have just gone for 30 minutes on the treadmill and watched SportsCenter and joined a gym and then stopped going after March. It's gotten that guy to actually lift weights, like lift legitimate, do deadlifts.
I always thought as CrossFit is resistant but not weightlifting.
So no,
has women, like it got women lifting weights, I think, a lot.
That
and
is
women
true.
Really interested in the sport of powerlifting, and to me that's really important.
So CrossFit
because
fueled powerlifting interest. That's
interesting to me. Yeah, so when I was growing up.
And especially Olympic lifting. I mean, it's gotten Americans who are traditionally at the bottom of the barrel when it comes to Olympic lifting. Even though we're athletically probably the greatest in the world, Olympic lifting has been something that Americans have never been dominant at. Now, through CrossFit alone, Americans have an interest in Olympic lifting, the snatch, and
I
the
love that Lithuanian
from
guy.
The eight.
Zagueta or whatever.
Oh, Zydrunas Savickas. Yeah, he's great.
Zydrunas.
From the from the ages of 17 until I was about 30 years old, I competed as a power lifter at a really high level and never really saw too many women at any of the meets.
Yeah.
You know, I was always thinking, like, as a young guy, as a teenager, like, well, when I can bench 500, chicks will be flocking to me. And I benched 500 and nobody cared. You know what I mean? And
it was just like, probably didn't stop you, though.
I think nowadays people would care a little bit more, but still they don't really care that much how much you lift. It's like what you look like and what your diet is and, you know, the things like that.
Well, I'm really psyched we're doing this today because two things I want to get into. One is, and I'm going to table it for a second, but I'll just introduce it now, is that I realized after the Trump physician press conference how effing confused people are about fitness versus trying to optimize health versus medically well.
Right.
There's huge confusion about that.
Didn't they say he only weighed 240, too?
It doesn't matter what he weighs. It doesn't matter. Yeah. He's healthier than me. And I'll explain what I mean by that.
That's interesting.
Okay. Yeah. From a medical perspective, his doctor was 1,000% spot on. And he's in much better shape medically than I am.
Why is that?
Yet, look at me. Do I look
No, you look like
– you look amazing, actually.
Yeah, but for a man of your age
– Yeah, so I should
be – Dr. Drew, 88 years old. no, but for a man of your age, you're the picture of health in many people's
externally.
Opinion.
Yes. For fitness, I am. And I'm using fitness to sort of perhaps have an impact on my medical issues. But it's nominal. It's a separate phenomenon. It's a separate issue. But we'll talk about that. But you mentioned diet.
Yeah.
I was curious what you guys thought about that guy that was on. Was it Rogan? That paleo? You said paleo.
Yeah, he's a doctor, a physician who eats nothing but meat.
I just interviewed him for 3 hours.
I figured.
My brother and I are doing a documentary about nutrition. And
that'll be awesome.
We interviewed Dr. Sean Baker for 3 hours.
He's the guy that eats like 12 pounds of meat.
Now, hold on. It's important for the audience who maybe isn't familiar with Chris or isn't that familiar with the world of powerlifting and strength training. Your brother, a very important figure in the world of powerlifting and kind of social media and how it applies to strength training. Your brother, Mark Smelly Bell, he's a celebrity.
Yeah, he's got a huge following and everything. But, you know, I can go back on this like 20-plus years. When I first moved to California, I was a power lifter. I went to Gold's Gym in Venice, and I was training with a guy, Mike O'Hearn, who's really pretty popular in the bodybuilding community.
He always claimed he was not taking supplements.
Claims he's natural. Yeah. Mike O'Trent.
Was he?
Mike O'Trent? I don't know. Anyway, so
he's very natural.
Moving on. No,
he's like 50 now and shredded and dense 240.
But his brother was the same way, right? He had a brother who's like exactly the same.
He has a brother who's a lot smaller than him, actually. Okay. But he's in great shape. And when I first got to California, I wanted to be like these guys. But I was actually pretty close to him in strength, but not anywhere near, you know, the way he looks or anything like that. But when I first got here, I was 240 pounds. And him and his training partner said, well, you're too fat. You gotta go on a diet. You know, basically it was pretty blatant, pretty obvious.
What are we talking, 96?
94.
Okay.
And so I said, well, what kind of diet, you know, do I go on? And he tells me to go get a piece of paper, get ready to write down. And it wasn't Mike O'Hearn. It was our training partner, Ron Fedko, who was a PhD in applied mathematics and physics, who told me, okay, get ready, write this down. And he told me red meat and water. And so I wrote that down, and I was waiting for the rest of it. And it was red meat and water, right? So
Now let's slow down. Now, is that the diet for a power lifter, for somebody who wants to bodybuild?
This was a diet for a guy,
for all human beings.
This was a diet for a guy who was overweight and wanted to compete in a lower weight class,
but it's a sports recommendation.
Sports recommendation.
Yeah, it's not a health recommendation.
Sure. Still wanted to. Well, it's going to turn into that. I'll get into that. And still wanted to be strong.
Yeah.
Like, and so how do I be strong without eating any carbs? And he's like, you're just going to eat red
no
meat.
No eggs, huh?
No. He just said you're going to eat red meat. So I did it. At the time, I was just naive. So I just did it so religiously for about 3 weeks. I got down to 218 pounds.
From what? From 240?
From 240.
In how 3 long? Weeks?
About 3 weeks.
That's crazy.
I won my weight class.
Wow.
At in a 220 weight class.
Now, wait a second. Did you carb up at all before the competition? Or?
Before the competition, I did. But here's why
I would argue way more is made of that than need be. But go ahead.
Yeah. I would argue the same thing, what I know now.
Yeah.
So basically, I carved up before the competition, and I won that competition. And I realized, like, oh, maybe we don't need so many carbs. That's what I was living on pasta. Yeah. So for a while,
pasta was the answer.
I did a ketogenic diet for a while back then, and I kept my weight, you know, pretty low and sustainable. But as the years went along and I was doing other things and working on films, and we've talked about this in the past, I had a double hip replacement surgery, which I shouldn't say turned me. I turned into a drug addict because of that. Every time I said my hip hurts, I was just given more pills. And for 2 years, they didn't know that they botched the surgery and would have to redo it.
If you don't mind me interjecting the stories. Since we last spoke, it's become increasingly clear, and you and I have talked about this, Mike, that there is a new category of addicted, which is not drug addict addicted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well,
I want to clarify that, but you can go ahead, Mike.
Listened to Chris say the word, and for those who don't know, I'm a drug addict. I'm in recovery. I refuse to hear the words, I was turned into a drug addict, unless you're talking about opioids.
Yeah.
Which I now know through just from anecdotal experience and then from seeing it through your eyes, Drew, as a physician. Something specific about opioid-based painkillers.
Yeah.
They can turn you into an addict.
I call it a dependent, non-addicted addict.
Right.
In other words, when you stop, you could probably stop. Mike, no stopping.
For what?
Without him treatment. Yeah. So it's really about stopping the opiates with the dependent addict, dependent addict.
And when I look at someone like myself, who my drug of choice was stimulants and alcohol, you're not going to become a daily morning drinker unless that's in your blood.
Yeah, right.
Okay?
Your genetics,
you don't just stumble upon that lifestyle. You don't just start learning how to cook crack and buying and become this sommelier of cocaine. That was in my blood.
Yeah.
Someone could easily get a hip replacement like Chris
all the time,
and then next thing you know, their life is spiraling out of control.
All the time happens.
Yeah, I'm not sure where I really fall in that because I did become the morning drinker. Mm-hmm. You know, I did become.
Was it your way of trying to deal with the opiates?
Well, I got off of opioids
first,
and then I switched to alcohol.
All right, so maybe you're an addict.
So I'm not really
old fashioned addict.
Yeah. So anyway,
there's another subcategory. I sort of break these all down in my head. There's another subcategory of opiate-induced addict.
Maybe that's
In other words, he wouldn't have been an addict had he not got exposed to the opiate, but once that switch was thrown by the opiates, it changes the biology.
Well, Chris, it is in your blood, though. I mean, you had another
brother. It's in my family, my older brother.
Well, clearly, if you have the real deal, you have the real deal.
But there was a really distinct difference between my older brother, Mike, a.k.a. Mad Dog, and myself, where, I remember just my dad saying, for example, my dad's like, hey, I heard if a dog sticks his head out the window, they get high. But that can't be true because if it was true, your brother would have his head out the window all the time. And he really meant that.
Yeah,
you know?
I get it.
And he said, that's the difference between you and Mike is where like Mike, he cannot stop no matter what we do.
Right. So he has a big, what we call a big biological burden. Yours was lesser, but still induced.
It was definitely lesser.
So triggered by opiates.
And I could definitely feel for my brother in the fact that he always had to have, he was always.
He's more like Mike.
You're relying on on something. And so, but, for me, so I did good with that diet a long time ago. I got into the drugs. I got up to like 260 pounds. And 1 year ago, it's almost like a year to the date, I was sitting with my brother. We were eating. I was about 230 pounds. And I just said to him, I'm too fat. I'm sick of this. I don't like the way I feel. I don't think I'm going to live very long. Like, I don't feel good. And then actually a month before that, on election day, I was walking to the polls with my girlfriend at the time, and I thought I was having a heart attack. I couldn't breathe.
Great.
I'm 44 years old at the time.
That's crazy.
And I couldn't breathe, and it was hot out and everything. But like, I'm just like, I'm too short to be this fat.
Were you taking any supplements or steroids or anything?
I wasn't on anything. And so, what I did was went home and just said, how do I stop inflammation? How do I beat how do I beat this thing that's beating me down? But I remember like it was yesterday sitting with my brother and I said, I'm gonna launch a war on carbs. And I was just kidding around. I'm like, I know carbs for me personally, that's what does it. And I said, war on carbs, and we toasted a piece of sashimi together. And from that day on, for 45 days I didn't eat carbs. And I lost like 50 pounds. And people think it's crazy, they think it's so wild, but there aren't really, there's not really essential carbohydrates that we need to have every day. That's something that's made up by the food industry to make us consume a lot of foods that are really bad for us, So I embarked on a ketogenic diet, lost a lot of weight, and now I've been sort of trumpeting that for a lot of other people. And this documentary that we're embarking on and talking about sort of starts with a ketogenic diet as the basis and then examines, like, is this the right way to eat? Is there something more to it? And we're just trying to figure out the truths so we can tell people some common truths so that, like you said, they're not so confused.
And I would argue there aren't all truths for all people.
Sure.
We are genetically very different.
It's very individualistic.
And also folded into the story about protein is fat. Mm-hmm. That story, which has been it gets controversy, and I still don't know quite what to do with it.
Yeah,
I'm a fat apologist, I'd say, right?
Which means what?
Which
means
I justify the taking of fats. I think it's probably appropriate. I'm sort of Vinny Tortorich, and I think it helps control diet.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, I have large vessel vascular disease in my family, and if I were not on medication, this is back to the fitness talk for later. I would have very, very serious concerns about that. So it depends on the setting, the person.
Sure. As you're both pointing out, you know, someone like Chris who's been through it himself and kind of used himself as a lab rat, and then someone like you, Drew, who sees it from a scientific standpoint, I always come back to the same argument that I make, is that the same problem with diet and nutrition advice is the same problem with, like, the Me Too movement or modern civil rights movement, is that they try to create this black and white idea of something that's incredibly individualized. Diet is unbelievably individualized down to the human being, and you can't make these broad claims like, well, the ketogenic diet is the best way to go, the vegan diet is the best way to go. I recall in my bodybuilding days, a guy I used to train with, and he was 5'10", exactly my size. He was a little bit naturally leaner than I was, but
Were you both doing juice?
Tons of steroids. Tons of steroids. Yeah. But I was 3 weeks out preparing to go on stage. And I could not eat over 40 grams of carbs, or I would put on, you know, I would bloat.
Wrong kind of weight.
I would bloat, and I would kind of get out of line with my goals. He was eating 400 or 500.
Yeah.
And shredded to the bone. And that was his, you know, then
he
again.
He was able to take that in.
That was his body. That was, I would eat 150, 200 grams of fat. He couldn't eat more than 50. He would get, you know, it's something. There's weird.
Well, there's some genetic testing for this now. Yeah. There's some people sort of building genetic models around this.
Sure. There's a great book out, anybody interested in reading about nutrition, that Rob Wolf put out called Wired to Eat. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty new book. And in that book, he discusses testing out carbohydrates using a glucose meter, which might be a little too far for some people, but for people like us, we do that kind of thing. And he breaks out the glucose meter and he checks his blood glucose a half an hour after he eats certain foods, so he knows, like, what he can eat and what he can't eat. If the reading's too high, he'll put that on, like,
That could be the future.
Eat that list.
Be the future.
And
it's
really interesting because
Now we're going to have it, you know, available on our wrists and things. You'll be able to wear a
glucose monitor. We know you could just cut the carbs out and get a similar result, but, like, why cut them out if they're there and we can utilize them, and we can utilize them for a good, quick energy and be faster, bigger, faster, stronger, right? Why not do those things? So I think looking at it in that way is an interesting way.
Also, people have different emotional reactions to drop. I mean, I'm fine. I drop carbs. I feel fine. Some people talk about that, quote unquote, that keto flu. Yeah. They get crippled.
I have heroin withdrawal. Yeah. I have opiate withdrawal from when I stop carbs.
Yeah.
Full on opiate withdrawal.
Really?
Desperation, irritability, preoccupations, depression, sleep disturbance. Full opiate withdrawal.
I think that's
full
aren't carbs similar to, what drugs do
similar
to your brain?
Well, certain people, clearly me, other people I know like him, cuts out carbs.
It just doesn't bother me.
Whatever.
Yeah. There was an interesting argument, and maybe you can actually add to this a lot further. So I was talking to somebody, actually Rob Wolf, the guy who wrote the book. I was speaking with him, and he was like, well, we know
that. The godfather of the paleo kind of diet.
Yeah. Rob's pretty much the king of the paleo world. But I was saying to him, like, well, you know, like, sugar's addictive. And he goes, well, you got to be careful there. Like, people aren't knocking over liquor stores to get their sugar.
Right. To use the addiction model too broadly is a mistake.
Okay. And so that's
There are certain people that have profoundly different motivational states from carbohydrates than, say, other people.
Sure.
I'm definitely one of them.
Tougher on women, usually, typically.
Typically, that's true.
I'll give you an example. Like, for, you know, there's behaviors in my family, you know, that are, you know, very, like, they seem addictive to me. Like, when we were younger, my mom was very big on hiding candy. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so we didn't find it and we didn't get into it, but, you know, and I think that that's sort of a behavior that's absolutely, like, very much like a drug addict, but not a drug addict, but like very
similar. It's very similar.
Similar
it's
issues.
In the same system, same issue for certain people. But let's go back to the physician you were talking to that ate all the meat. We didn't finish that conversation.
Sure.
What did you learn from talking to him?
So what I learned from talking to him really is if you were to strip your diet down to like nothing. The only other way to really do that is fasting, right? We know that red meat contains pretty much every nutrient that we need in order to sustain life. You could sustain life on red meat. The only thing that it's really low in is vitamin C. However, an interesting thing, if you're not eating carbohydrates and
you don't
glucose,
need so much.
You don't need so much vitamin C.
Yeah.
So we know we can sustain life.
That was his big observation, right?
This guy. On red meat. I've actually been doing it for the past 3 weeks. So I started January 1st on this, what they call carnivore diet. And I can't find anything to complain about it except for maybe once in a while I want something different, you know, to eat.
What's the shit situation like?
There really is none. There's you poop.
What do you think would happen with that?
Why, because as from a layperson's point of view, I think no fiber, shit problems.
Oh, plenty of
I also
bulk
think,
in the meat.
Yeah, I think fiber is also something that's overstated. Yeah. You know, like fiber comes from the useless, you know, holes of corn stalks and things like that that we don't need in the first place.
Right.
So why do we need that? Well, because the RDA is telling us, USDA is telling us, like, we need this because the Department of Agriculture has nowhere to dump all that psyllium husk, right? So they got to dump it somewhere. Why not inside of us, right?
That's the way
I look at it.
Well, I look at it from a dummy's point of view, and I think to myself, I eat a bunless double-double, and I don't fart, and I don't have stomach upset. If I eat something highly fibrous, that's the only thing that gets me
broccoli
to just constantly fart and to have that feeling where I'm not if
like
I'm not
that?
Actively farting, I'm going to fart soon.
Do you like that?
No, and I assume I like the smell, but I don't like to feel that way because I just intuitively think to myself, well, this is my body saying this is inappropriate.
Now we're bleeding into a topic which you and I probably ought to do a future episode or several episodes because it's so complicated, which is the differences amongst our different gut systems.
Gut microbiomes,
gut muscular systems. I'm somebody that needs – I'm way better with a lot of bulk. Way better.
Yeah.
And it's almost the more the better.
Is
and
that from a – appetite
so
control?
Green leafy vegetables.
A little bit of appetite and a little bit of irritable bowel.
Let me ask you a question.
I have some sort of microbiome that's sort of not great.
You look awesome. I just wanted to tell you that,
Thank you.
Second of all, how do you eat?
I eat a lot of eggs. I eat eggs in the morning. I eat some bread. I try to eat sourdough breads.
Lots of jizz.
Sourdough bread?
Just because somebody convinced me that at one time, and I like it now.
Okay.
And I generally, I did one of these genetic profiles, and it confirmed everything I already knew about myself. Everything. And so I'm somebody that can go long periods of time without eating it. It does not bother me. But once I start, I cannot stop. So I tend to
– You and I both.
Other than having maybe an egg or two in the morning, that's my day until dinner time.
Wow.
And then I'll eat.
So
know,
kind of a lot of fasting almost, like almost
intermittent fasting. I'm intermittent fasting. And if I eat all the time, I'm constantly storing material.
Yeah.
If I eat regularly, it stays on. Period.
And you gain weight?
End of story.
Do you gain
no matter
fat?
What I'm eating.
Even
if I'm eating string beans,
I will use it. When I start, I can't stop.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just something that
I've just
noticed
reality,
for myself.
Yeah.
Have you been fasting during this carnivore?
You know what?
Never.
Carnivore is great. I woke up the other day at like 6 o'clock in the morning and made 2 hamburger patties.
Yeah.
Like big, you know, and that's just something that you don't normally do. Got up in the morning, cooked up a steak. So no, I haven't really been intermittent fasting. I've been eating when I'm hungry.
Right.
He doesn't advocate that. What's the doctor?
Sean Baker. Yeah.
Sean Baker.
Dr. Baker.
He eats like 12 pounds of meat a day,
right? He said something.
And
really,
he said he expanded it as it gone on and didn't gain any weight.
He said something really interesting to me that I thought was like funny. It doesn't prove anything really, but he's like, hey, look at all the vegetable eating animals out there. They're all fat, like hippopotamus and this. You know, like it's fat and
humans.
But look at carnivores; they're all ripped. And I'm like, you know what? You're kind of right there.
Well, I don't know if that's
you got
they
me on
may
that.
Or may not be an associate.
Well,
positive
association. You know, you got me on that one.
Interesting.
I do not. I'm not one of these guys who has like an anti vegan take, or I don't have a bone to pick with the vegan movement.
No, neither do
I. Think that if you eat vegan for the purposes of for moral reasons, it's beautiful, and the idea of showing compassion and care for animals is a beautiful thing that I totally support.
Mike and I are going to go out and hunt for our food.
But
we're going to go hunt.
But I do think that You always find like guys like Mike Mahler, guys like the Diaz brothers or Mac Danzig in the UFC. When there is a vegan who is buff and looks good, you always hold that up as this prized trophy.
Sure.
In reality, that's not very common. Most people who are vegan are softer. Are they?
I just wonder
if that's appropriate for the human system. If that's the case, like generally lean muscular humans are eating a carnivore style diet. Same with the animal kingdom.
Well, this is now sort of bleeding over towards this fitness versus medically well kind of conversation.
Yeah, you guys go into that because I'm going to pee in my pants.
No, I want you in on this one.
Right, well, I'll listen. He's
listening. We'll take a little break. Be right back while Mike pees his pants.
There you go.
Oh, this is everything I ever dreamed of.
We are back. You've urinated. Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
So while you were away, we were geeking out on low rep, high volume.
Low volume, high intensity, yeah.
No.
Powerlifting stuff.
Yeah.
Saying that it's fun to do like low reps, like just have to go in and bang out like three.
Anything over five reps is cardio.
I literally feel bad. I break down above 12 reps. Yeah. I feel bad and I hate doing it. And at 8 reps, I love doing it. And
well,
I feel great and I get something out of it.
But you're talking about.
But that's my genetics.
But also not only your genetics, a different outcome. I mean, if you're going to train purely for hypertrophy, I would imagine, Chris, tell me your thoughts on it. That's something you're going to have to get into. You have to get into those rep ranges that are just pure, the lactic acid buildup, and you're going to have to feel that discomfort. If you
break down above 12.
Well, that's fine, but you're perfectly fine within that rep range to maintain or to achieve the goal you want to achieve.
Yeah.
If Dr. Drew wanted to put on 30 pounds of muscle, I'm going to think you're going to have to get into that 12 to 15 rep range.
I think the
science changes so often that, like, in my mind, what I do, I vary it so much that, I'll do sets of three, but I'll do other things for sets of 20.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know that there's anybody that really knows for a fact.
Yeah.
So I
agree with you wholeheartedly.
You almost have
to find your own way.
I agree with
body.
That completely. And I gauge.
I mean, if I were doing steroids,
what is anabolic?
You're right. If I were doing steroids, 100%.
Yeah.
But based on my genetic innate biology, I think I get more out of it than.
Have you ever messed with testosterone or anything like that?
I would love to.
He had prostate cancer.
We're going to get into more about my medical stuff.
Oh, okay.
And I also definitely want to focus in a lot about anabolics and
And I like the way Mike said that to him. He has prostate cancer.
He's like, he can't.
What a bitch.
Yeah, he can't do it.
Do you know a robot ripped his asshole out?
We'll get into that.
Hey
now.
Listen, I do think, though, you pointed out you got to do what's best for you. I do look back at myself and I think what is giving me in my perceived idea of the most anabolic effect. I know that, like you said, if I'm going to deadlift, it's three reps. If I'm going to squat, I'll go to 20. I'll go to 30 because something about high rep squatting for me the whole day. I'm an animal. I eat. I feel tighter. My skin feels tighter. I feel stronger.
Opposite.
And I feel like I could eat all day.
I get unhungry and I'm tired.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Isn't that weird?
And we're all different.
Hey, speaking of, some good news on the testosterone front.
Yeah.
There was some data, a great study just came out on men who are, I think they were castration-resistant prostate cancer with metastatic disease. They were doing bipolar testosterone. They were hitting them with high levels of testosterone.
Fuck yeah.
And it seemed like it was turning the genes on these tumors in such a way that they became better targets for chemotherapy. And so now they're saying rather than androgen depletion, it's this bipolar androgen pulsing. I'm like, oh.
So wait, before chemo, do they get super swole from all the
– I don't know. That's
crazy.
Yeah, right?
Imagine you put them in like Bane and then they chemo and it just depletes them.
A definite 100% link between testosterone and prostate cancer?
No, absolutely not. But once you have it, then it gets kind of scary. Then it's like, whatever.
Yeah, but you don't want to mess with it. It's
you could – it definitely grows – it definitely grows under the influence of testosterone, and if I've got something hidden somewhere, I'd rather it stay hidden.
Right.
Let me ask you another medical question, because it seems like so many people are on these. So statin drugs, they take away – they lower your cholesterol, right?
Yeah.
And your testosterone is made out of cholesterol. Yeah. Is that killing your testosterone levels?
I'm on a statin too. Back into my medical stuff. I felt like that was happening, and I felt like I sort of somehow – went back towards a more mid-range with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it immediately occurred to me that could be a possibility, though no one's ever documented that. But I've had so many other things affecting my testosterone levels, like having surgeries and shit I've been going through. But I do have a sense that I bet you there's a little something there. Why not? I mean, why wouldn't it be?
Yeah.
The question then is, how low can you get your cholesterol levels before that starts to be an issue? And if you really need to take a statin like I do, because I have horrible genetics around vascular disease, what should my goal be without affecting that testosterone
sure.
level? And no one knows
that. Is it rare to have what you have? Like, is what you have
what I have?
Because
yes.
it seems like an awful lot of people are on statins.
Yeah, well, it's statins. As all my cardiac surgeons and friends tell me, they're like, ever since statins came around, they don't do surgery anymore. It just absolutely revolutionized heart disease. It just absolutely just.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it just put it away. It just
wow.
it significantly affected. And I can tell
see,
you
that's interesting because yeah. I hear you know on the flip side that they're overprescribed and like
they there's concern that there's overprescribed because there has been so much positive effect that we all get very enthusiastic about it. I can tell you for sure in my situation, my dad had large vessel vascular disease. This is mm-hmm. something. See, there's sort of four different kinds of vascular disease generally. There's peripheral vascular disease, like way out in your legs. You get that from smoking. Mm-hmm. There's coronary artery disease, which is what we all are aware of. There's intracranial cerebral vascular disease.
In your brain?
And extracranial cerebral vascular disease. Wow. You get small vessel or large vessel cerebral vascular disease. And then there's large vessel vascular disease, which is the aorta.
What the fuck? We're done.
And
we're
so,
all dead.
So in my genetics, we have large vessel vascular disease and late in life coronary disease. And so I thought, well, I got – and I did everything I could to bring that cholesterol down. Trust me, everything.
Where
and,
is it at? 300?
Right. No, it wasn't that bad. My LDL was like 40. HDL, rather, was like 40. LDL, 120, no matter what I did. Like, it was a bad mix. Mm-hmm. And so I, the whole time, like, shit, I got to do something. And finally, a physician, and I was a little hypertensive. And the whole, I'm lean and dieting and running. Finally, a doctor looked at me and goes, you can only outrun your genetics so long, Dr. Pinsky. I'm like, God damn it, she's absolutely right.
Yeah.
I'm 50-something years old. I've got horrible genes. It took out everyone else in my family. I don't want to be one of those people. I immediately went on antihypertensives and statins. And then got a calcium score like 5 years later, 0.0, which
0.0.
Yeah, 0.0. And so everyone in my medical world was like, that's crazy given your genetics, because they knew my dad too. And I was like, yeah, that is crazy. So I am pharmacology for me did way more than fitness, right? I'm trying to fight genes back. Now, I'm also interested in fitness. I want to be fit. I feel better fit. I look better fit. It probably is helping me. It's certainly not hurting me to be fit, but it really doesn't change my medical status. I'm a cancer patient. I've got vascular disease. I've got hypertension, hypercholesterolemia. I'm way worse off medically than Donald Trump.
And that's what you meant before.
That's what I was talking about. And yet you look at the two, put us side by side in right. a bathing suit, and you're going to go, well, that's the healthy guy. You're going to
point. How much of that is Trump genetics, though? Maybe
all my shit is genetics. Of course,
right.
It's all
so
genetics.
Maybe the Trump
genetics.
Family has these great internal
yeah,
genetics.
Clearly, yeah. And he can tolerate eating shitty foods and being overweight. And,
yeah.
But he does not have any vascular disease. But he's on a statin too, and his calcium score was not 0.0. It was about 90.
How much does he bench though? Come on,
I know.
Get down to it. Ask him 550.
Yeah, but
you know? I bench 550. Was excellent. You should all bench.
But the three of us. Put great value in that. Like, well, yeah. Who cares? As long as you can feel
yeah, but if
still
you
strong.
Found out that Trump benched like 405, you'd be pretty impressed.
Fuck yeah, I would.
Right?
I wouldn't
like,
believe it.
There's no way. There's no way.
No, I wouldn't believe yeah. it either. Yeah. But if I found that
no,
out,
no.
Like, that's
it'd be impressive.
I heard Obama did 200, just flat 200. I was like, okay.
Well, he's in worse
Obama's
shape
in...
than Donald Trump because of his smoking.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a far more serious issue than obesity. Now, people want to make the case that it's not. It is. Smoking, I lived through the years
smoking's
when people
smoking.
Smoking's
still smoking. People
didn't
oh, like to get crazy about it. Yeah.
And alcohol, not good. Trump doesn't drink. I have drink once in a while. So medically
I like that you said I lived through the years when people were smoking because it's not really a thing anymore.
You
right?
should have seen the years I
Dude,
lived through. Yeah.
You and I both live in Venice, so you can
yeah.
empathize. I was on my street. This is probably like a year ago. And I saw a kid, maybe 19 years old, skateboarding towards me. And he was smoking something. As he got closer to me, I saw that he was smoking a cigarette, and I was shocked.
Yeah, because you don't see it anymore.
I see plenty of people smoking weed, vaping.
Or vape.
I was fucking shocked to see someone smoking a regular old cigarette.
Even
it just doesn't make
even
sense.
Even in rehab, there was like everybody had a vape, but yeah. people didn't really have
yeah,
you know, cigarettes. But you know, to that point, though, my brother and I, as we're making this documentary about you know obesity and diet, we say that, you know, hey, like we hope that in the future people, like, remember when being fat was a thing?
Yeah.
Like it used to be like a thing.
Smoking.
You know, like smoking. Yeah. Like that's the days I'm waiting for, because we know that we can get there. It's like, will we ever get there?
Gone the other way, unfortunately. But smoking, but let me describe what I mean by the years when people smoked. I mean, when I started practicing medicine, the generation of the 30s and 40s were coming into their 70s and 80s, and they all had emphysema, they all had heart disease, they all had peripheral vascular disease. And when I would confront them about their cigarette smoking, you would thought I like wanted to take a piece of their soul away from them. It was weird. Their self-concept was so attached to, I'm the cool smoker.
Yeah.
Even in their 70s, they could not – they'd start crying.
Yeah.
Well, when I would say, this has got to go. And I'm
it
like –
It's pretty fucking –
And you're like the young guy being like a –
3 or 5-year-old bodybuilder. It's like, don't smoke. They're like – they start crying. I was shocked.
They're like, I hate my doctor. He told me to stop smoking.
I know.
There is a weird thing about how you pointed out, Dr. Drew, that an endeavor for fitness doesn't necessarily have an effect on you medically.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Right.
It might help, but it's a separate phenomenon.
I'm saying it can hurt. And at elite level fitness,
yeah, well, I,
with
listen,
endurance running and then with powerlifting and strength
training,
let's
be fair.
Sometimes it can.
And there's the strongman syndrome, right? Yeah. What do they call it? It's not the Adonis syndrome. There's
Adonis complex?
Well, there's an Adonis complex, which is really sort of
– Which we all have.
Which we body all have. Which is body dysmorphia along with sort of a exercise bulimia. This is where it goes mental health-wise off the rack, right? So there's a medical issue where it can work against you, your hips. And then there's a psychiatric part to it too, where it's like, you have to balance all this.
Yeah, because I see these guys, you know, like Ironman or ultra marathon runners, things like that. They're not doing too good medically.
Yeah,
and same with, you know, pro bodybuilders, pro professional competitive powerlifters, probably not doing too good. I don't know if the human body was necessarily designed for that. So
we see it like with bodybuilding, like it's cool to a certain point, and then at what point does it break down?
That's right.
About 1979.
There's a guy.
That's where it stopped being healthy.
I'll give you a good example. A guy like Rich Piana.
Uh-huh.
Rich Piana was huge.
God rest
he was like
soul.
The biggest bodybuilder that there was.
Did he die or something?
He passed away, and they think it might have been opioids or whatever. But when you're that big, it was really cool. It was really cool to watch him, to follow him, to be like, he doesn't give a shit. Oh, wait, then he died.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right, you're like, this guy doesn't care.
Super nice guy.
We were talking.
He was great.
Real nice
guy.
He was
great. He was a great inspiration to a lot of people. But
we were talking about, I used to work in Bill Pearl's gym in the 70s.
Oh, the Prince of Pasadena.
Right. Mike knew it because he lived in Pasadena, too.
Bill Pearl's the man.
Yeah, he was. But a lot of the guys that were under his tutelage back then, dead. Quickly.
Yeah.
Dude, Chris
funny
and
enough,
I both.
I have a pretty funny story of working out in Gold's gym. One time, Mickey Rourke came up to me and was asking me about steroids.
Right.
And he's asking me, like, hey, you know, blah, blah, does it, you know, this work, that work? And I'm like, why, you know, why asking me? Why don't you go ask this other trainer? He's trained everybody that's up on the wall here.
Yeah.
He goes, all those guys on the wall are dead.
Oh.
I was like, that's
you go
a good
to Gold's
point.
Gym Venice, and it's a very sick game you play. With the walls are covered with, like, is that person still alive yet? And we're talking about NPC champions from 2001, not 1950.
It's not specifically steroids. It's like everything that these guys do.
Yeah. Right.
It's all the things that they do that, you know, go into. Like, I've had a couple people that have
dehydration.
They've had, you know, kidney transplants or liver transplants. So for a while, the big thing was Nubain.
Yeah.
And people were taking Nubain like crazy. And then
that's an opiate.
Yeah. After the Nubain, they would get off of it and then would take. Advil like crazy, and then I'd get a, you know, kidney transplant.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Jesus.
Well, so that's happened several times.
You bring up a good point, Chris, and I want to know, even from your own personal experience and then from what you see just being around the culture so much, there's also the mind frame of the same person who's going to fucking become a drug addict or is going to act out as a drug addict. It's kind of the same guy who wants to deadlift 650 pounds. It's not – there is a weird – kind of daredevil mentality that comes with someone who wants to be 280 and shredded and step on the Mr. Olympia stage to deadlift 700 pounds, whatever it may be, that those extreme measures.
Yes, and there's a lot of crossover getting high type biology from steroids that are similar to stimulants.
Well, do you see that, especially, you know, it's, I guess, almost 10 years on the dot since Bigger, Stronger, Fat, right?
Yeah, 10 years ago.
When it
debuted. Sundance was It's going on now. So
crazy.
So they a 10-year right on, man, right on the
10-year anniversary. Happy anniversary.
Fantastic. I mean, you know, that documentary in particular did so much to shed some light on and give some real truth to what performance enhancing drugs are, because there's this mythology of Mark McGuire and Lance Armstrong. People don't really know what the fuck they're talking about, but it gets talked about so much. But there is an addictive component,
sure,
to seeing those types of gains, you know, that only come.
I think it's addictive being like to be great at something,
yeah,
to be good at something. For me, growing up, I was shorter than everybody. I was never good at anything. And then when I lifted a weight, I remember the first time I bench pressed anything significant, I was going against my older brother, and I benched 275, and he was like, "Oh shit!"
Without training.
Well, this is after a little bit of training,
yeah.
But I did it pretty young in like 10th grade.
Yeah.
And then after a little bit more training, I'm like, wow, I benched 315. And my older brother was starting to get nervous. And I knew at that point, okay, I'm good at this. And when I, you know, took that and ran with it, my younger brother, severely learning disabled, you know, had all sorts of problems in school, but I got him lifting at 12 years old. And, you know, by the time he was 16 years old, he was benching 315. And now he's, you know, he's a multimillionaire, and people are like, how did that happen? And it happened because he was so passionate about lifting weights, and he made it. He made it that one thing. He became the best, you know, in the world.
And it shines through in both you and your brother. Is that you're not just meatheads. You're just guys that have a really intense passion.
We're definitely meatheads.
No, because you know, listen,
meatheads plus.
Listen, there's plenty of guys who I meant it in a non-derogatory way.
No, sure.
Because you could include all three of us as being meatheads if you just say, "Hey, we like to lift weights and drink protein shakes."
Yeah.
What I mean by that is that there's such a there's almost this rancid kind of world of the guys in the you know the cut off tank tops and the fucking neon. And the old world idea of being a your brother, in his videos really cuts to the bone, the center of problems for people who are trying to dissect the deadlift, trying to dissect the bench press, trying to dissect the conventional deadlift, as opposed to narrow grip. Sumo stance.
Okay.
The sumo stance deadlift. And there's a real interesting passion for it. And you can almost tell that when you introduce it to your brother, he probably became one of those guys that was obsessive. Like I see with guys with guitar.
In the beginning, my younger brother was really resistant to lifting because he was like, "I don't want to do that. You know, that's your thing, you know, kind of whatever." And then I think once he started realizing he got good at it, there was one particular day where he beat my cousin. He was only like 13 years old. And my cousin was my same age, and I remember he beat him in bench press, and then that was it.
He was in.
He just decided to take off, you know, from there. And I remember him breaking records when we were teenagers. I think the record for the California State bench press champion was 260 pounds, and Mark went in at 14 and did 360.
Oh my god!
And people were like, "What? Like, where did this guy come from?" And so then they bring him in the room and they're testing him for steroids or giving like a, you know, 15-year-old kid or 14-year-old kid a polygraph test.
Oh my god!
You know,
for steroids because
they
thought
psychologically healthy.
Well, no, because they're like, "Well, you're the strongest one here."
Yeah, we're good. Different biologies, different kinesiologies.
We always got tested. My brother and I always got tested in all the meets back in the day because they knew that we were the teenage kids and we probably weren't on anything.
Yeah.
So they only test 10% of the lifters. So if they test the women and the teenagers, they basically get away with not testing anybody. So that's kind of how it went for the most part. You know,
is there a certain level though? I mean, there is so much of the mainstream media demonizes steroids as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
From an anti-aging standpoint, from just an overall health standpoint, and this question for you, Drew, and for Chris, there has to be some kind of wiggle room there though, where a guy can be on 250 milligrams a week and improving his health medically. You know, 250 a test, maybe GH every day. Something.
And let me just step
crazy.
Back from and say we've been doing that with women for a long time, and they're still concerned about it, the breast cancer risk and that sort of thing. But we've done hormone replacements for women forever, with varying degrees of success and enthusiasm. But it's back again, both testosterone and estrogen for women. Why shouldn't there be something like that for men?
Right.
And I listen, one thing I have seen, I will tell you what, I've seen have people have rapid cognitive deteriorations when we put them on testosterone blocking agents. So it makes sense to me there may be some neuroprotective qualities, right. some aging related, you know, who your telomeres don't get as short as
testosterone. They used to use it for they did a gigantic study for to use it as a male birth control back in the day.
Yeah.
Which I think every guy would be cool with. Like, okay, cool. I take some testosterone.
Fire, let's do it. Yeah.
And way better than a vasectomy. I just get jacked.
And they actually have done some pretty large-scale studies where men have taken up to 600 milligrams of testosterone a week.
That's a lot.
Showing no detrimental side effects.
Yeah, there's some concern about the vascular system with that level. But again, it's not like horrific.
Yeah.
And we really still really don't know yet.
So they're like up to 600 milligrams, which is a lot. Like, you know, you said wiggle room, we're talking about a dose normally being 200. So that's three times the normal allotted dose. Also, the other thing is that you could be on 200 milligrams of exogenous testosterone and pass a drug test. So it all depends on – because the drug test goes like how many – you know, how high is your testosterone level above your epitestosterone?
Right.
And there's so many ways to manipulate that we don't know if people are really.
And our range for normal is insanely big. You know, it's just 200 to 800 is the normal range for a male.
How much of kind of the Hollywood scene is, if not directly using anabolic agent, androgenic agent, the clenbuterol, the GH, the ephedrine,
I would say it's rampant. I mean, like, I know all the people that train those people, and they're all taking it. So it's like,
no, but are any physicians participating in this? Any doctors?
You know what?
There's buff doctors. And by that, I mean not buff like you're a doctor and you're buff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys that are like, they're physicians that cater to the world of athletes.
Yeah, but some of them are like people that give out opiates too. I mean, they're very similar to that. They're drug dealers.
I would say
guys that are serious about it, there are very few, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would say that like in the older, like in the population of guys like over 50 and stuff where they're not really so concerned about getting in trouble, you know, like a doctor prescribing testosterone to an older actor or something, not going to really get in trouble for that. I'm sure that goes on a lot. Like I personally have a doctor that I know treats a lot of people that are in movies and TV and stuff like that very responsibly. You know, it's like he'll give you your 200 milligrams of testosterone and not much else, you know, with that. He's not prescribing Dianabol or Anavar.
Yeah, but still, he's prescribing minimally. I don't know if he's prescribing responsibly. I don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah. All I'm saying is I know what he prescribes me, and I'd love
to be on that shit.
It's minimal, you know.
I could. What?
I don't understand.
The producer doesn't want
I don't understand. The voice of God coming.
Yeah.
No, you wouldn't.
I would not like to be on testosterone. No, you wouldn't like it if I were on testosterone.
No, because Susan be walking for the rest of her life.
So I take testosterone. I'm on a 200 milligram dose. I'm admitting it. Coming out with it.
How old are you?
45.
Who gives a shit then?
Well, you're a little young for that, but I would say,
don't you think that the two hip replacements and all the shit he's been through hasn't affected his testosterone?
My testosterone level is 49.
Yeah. What?
The first time.
Why?
The first
opiates.
Time.
That's the opiates.
The first time they tested it.
That was. Are you on drugs though? Then.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it does that.
That plummets it.
Yeah.
So I was pretty low.
But but they do give testosterone replacements for people on opiates because it does really.
Right now it's normal, you know, but it's still, you know, 200 milligrams.
That's kind of low.
That's
low for your age.
Mine's higher.
Really? Wow.
Yes.
God's is higher.
That's why she looks that good.
I don't feel that different being on it than being off.
Yeah, sure.
It's like I don't feel like massively like, well, I can totally tell that I'm on it or if I'm not.
Well, that's the difference between I was doing 750 milligrams a week and mixing it with Tren and Deca, and you definitely feel when you're not on that.
How'd your face look?
You know what? I never dealt with acne. Not my life.
But you didn't get
I did like a big fucking pumpkin.
Yeah.
I look like Stallone after like one of his GH binges.
Are you doing anything now?
No.
You look great.
Thank you.
So why were you doing that? You thought you needed to do it.
Well, because I wanted to be superhuman. I didn't want to be, I think that guy lifts weights. I wanted to fucking turn into Bane. I had some weird, and I'd just gotten sober. And so that was my... That was how I was going to fill that void. Is that I was going to completely devote myself into.
And I would tell you that the stimulant addict that uses steroids that doesn't cop to it, those guys die.
Yeah,
all the time.
Because
he not only copped to it, he got straight about it. But they hide it. You know, there's all this hiding about steroid use.
And I think that's a problem too. Is like it, you know. the people that do it, it is a very secret
which is
behavior.
So ridiculous.
I remember
used to be really secret.
In some circles,
well, Dr. Charles Yeselis actually went so far as to say, other than pedophilia, it's the most secretive behavior I've ever encountered. And he was sort of the guy that wrote the book on steroid behavior.
Well, and I will tell you that it's not even just so much that they don't want to admit it or there's just some sort of stigma against it. They don't want to stop. And eventually somebody's going to say, hey, man, that's not good for you. And they didn't want to get near that.
That was the reason why I didn't tell anybody about opioids. I wanted to just keep, you know what? I know this is killing me, but if I tell somebody, then I got to stop doing it. And
at the point that you say it, you're sort of admitting it to yourself too. Yeah. So there's two layers. One is you got somebody saying this is deadly, and you've now let it in on your own.
And I think it's smart that you bring that up because with steroids, you know, if you're not mentally ready to take on that physical responsibility, that's where we get into those roid rages.
I've been around it. Like I said, even at Pearl's Gym and the Doug Brignoli's Gym. I used to see these guys. They used to kind of pull me aside. Can I get? I'm like, whoa. Yeah. No, I can't do that.
Yeah, but you get the human grade.
Like, oh, you got people asking you for it.
Yeah, like, yeah, hey, yeah. Hey, bro. Because you know, I've been in the gym since I was 15. We all kind of knew each other. And now I'm a resident in medicine. And
they thought you were going to be the go-to guy.
Thank God I did not never give anybody anything. Dr. Deca. Sort of shocked.
Yeah, but you can't, Dr. Deca Drew. Because you can't get.
But I can see how, by the way, if I were taking it myself, it would be a lot easier bar.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Then you'd be like, yeah, it's good. I know it's good. Yeah, I'm taking it.
When you're getting veterinary grade shit, though, the idea of a physician getting you some human grade testosterone sounds fantastic.
Is that what you were getting, veterinary?
Yeah, you're salivating right now.
Have you been down to Mexico?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I've been down to Mexico. I've been in the stores where there's like live chickens clucking around, and then you pull the testosterone off the shelf, and there's like a bull on it. It says testosterona 500. You're like, oh, this looks like it's good shit.
And you know, there's
like,
live farm stock animals around it, so why wouldn't it be safe to inject it into my fucking body?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's good for these cows.
And that's what you think because, you know, like, I don't know. I would think.
I get two bottles of that and some Novadex.
Okay. Now we've gone all the way down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
How do we express to people healthy? We've discussed the difference between fitness and health.
Right.
We've discussed the sort of the range of behaviors within Swole Patrol.
Yeah.
And we've now gone down the rabbit hole, which we don't want anybody to go down.
No, don't go down the rabbit hole.
And let me just say, I've also noticed even people that go down the rabbit hole, but just generally people that work out every day, have a remarkable resilience and an ability to sort of get shit done in life, even if they didn't go to school. They just – something about going to a gym every day is a kind of a discipline. It's kind of different, kind of an experience that just – it's almost like meditation. It carries you almost like nothing else.
Right.
So are we going to give any kind of
– Well, and let me give this caveat. You know, want to know why? Even in comparison to really healthy endeavors like martial arts, like studying one of the arts, painting or there's always extraneous factors that can get in the way. With everything. My wife is an actress. She could be the most talented actress in the world if she doesn't get seen by the right people. There's so many factors that go into it. You could be really working hard at jiu-jitsu. If you go up against a guy who grew up in fucking Brazil and he's going to choke you to death. But if you – there's nothing in between you and the weights.
Yeah,
if you come back 3-4 days a week – and you incrementally increase if you have a response to it, and it's very clean.
But to the argument you're making, it's meditative. I really believe it's a meditative
absolutely
for some people more than others. For me, profoundly.
I think for me, getting into the gym every day in the morning, that's what sort of starts my day. It gets my mind going. Yesterday, I'll give you a great example. I had to go in, and I knew I had to deadlift yesterday, and I have two fake hips. So I'm thinking, okay, 315 pounds for 3 sets of 5 reps. I'm going to go in, and I'm going to do that. After the first set, it was so hard.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I don't care how hard this is. Well, I'm going to stick it out, and I'm going to get through these. I got through them, and I felt so good after.
Carole and I talk about this all the time. There is something about – creating adversity on a regular basis.
It was totally creative.
Yeah, Navy SEAL guys talk about this. A lot of guys that succeed in various ways talk about. You know, Coral and I have started taking cold showers every day, just to give us something adverse to go through
together.
Yeah,
we could.
Together, yeah.
We could. Well, that we have to do every day that we hate, that we do just to do it. Just because
you Dr. Drew's cock in the cold shower still twice as big as mine.
That's crazy.
Even when he shrivels up in the cold shower, it's amazing.
When I go inside out, it's
about
the
same. How do you do it?
All right.
Whoa, Mike, whoa, our producer's
the voice
yelling
of God
at us.
Is getting,
yeah.
Oh, we got to take a break. I thought you were saying wrap it up. All right, we're going to take a break. Our guest, Chris Borbell, filmmaker, strength trainer, all-around great guy. We'll take a quick break. Be right back.
Okay, we're back. And then, Mike, but I wanted to get to some sort of a prescriptive sort of position for the three of us for what we would recommend for the average person. And it's different ages, by the way.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way. That's all I wanted to do was have Chris's opinion and Drew, your opinion, the biggest fallacies that are being spread in the fitness world, and then also what is the best
advice. This was a survey. We were sort of touching on everything. My thing is, first of all, the diet and the exercise you will do is the one you should do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you don't like it, you ain't going to do it. I don't care what it is. Your motivational system.
Well,
will
I don't
want
to say like
you don't
it.
You have to love
if
it.
If you can't adhere to it.
If you really hate it, then it's not going
to
work.
It's hard to tell somebody like me or you to go do yoga if you're not going to do it.
I can't stand it. Yeah,
if
I can't
you don't
stand
like
it. But, and by the way, I have had patients and stuff who really – they actually are miserable when – I feel so lucky that I'm not that when they exercise. They literally feel extreme misery with even modest amounts of exercise. And I feel very sad for people like that because there's almost no way to get them
I don't understand
how
somebody
either.
Can't grab a barbell and be like,
I know. I don't either. But they're out there. Believe me. I've seen them. So for those people, I mean, walk.
Yeah.
Whatever. Do something. Move.
You know, walking has been my savior for losing weight. My brother and I started this thing called the 10-minute walk. It's really easy. It's a hashtag. Hashtag 10-minute walk. And what we do, we just encourage everybody that we know, everybody, including our parents who do it all the time now. Every time you eat a meal, you take a 10-minute walk. It's been shown to increase
as we've been telling diabetics that forever.
Yeah, it's been shown to increase your metabolism.
Reduces insulin resistance,
all these things. So it's the easiest thing I've ever done.
So move. Walk.
And it works.
And by the way, I would add to – Tortorich said this to me too. I think he's right. After about the age of 55 or so, running is pretty important. Mm-hmm. I do very low intensity, very slow running, and it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It makes everything else sort of possible.
As long as you don't kick it into the glycolytic level, staying 120
below. A low-grade stress. Low-grade stress as we recover from, and we seem to do better after them.
Real low-grade. So that's important. But I just think resistance training is key at all ages. Everybody?
I think another good key thing.
And by the way, both genders.
Absolutely.
And so many women are they look at weight training as just this nasty force.
They also have this very bizarre statement that everybody says, which is, I don't want to get too big.
Yeah.
Which is the most bizarre statement.
As if you're going to magically do something,
bro.
That every fucking bodybuilder.
Too huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
People on just tons of anabolic steroids and to train for a living. Yeah, they can gain 10 pounds in a year if they're fucking
it's that
lucky.
It's a story where somebody's like looking at Arnold going, I don't want to look like that. Yeah, he's like, don't worry, you never will.
Yeah,
you won't.
Yeah.
Don't worry, you won't.
Arnold doesn't look like that anymore.
No, but
he
also
still looks decent, though.
He does.
He's
look
still
good.
Got pretty big pipes. I see him in Golds.
Yeah.
Works out of Golds every day.
I see him all the time. And I always talk to Drew about how it's a very strange thing and we'll never see it again. A worldwide, massive, A-plus level celebrity. Who just talks to people, walks around.
Yeah, but tell him what he tells you.
Oh, yeah. My father is really, really dedicated to the Special Olympics and has been for a long time. And he subsequently got me into it. So every year they have a couple big, big galas in Southern California. And up until the incident with his housekeeper, Arnold would show up with Maria Shriver, who everyone knows the Shriver family has pretty much founded the Special Olympics. So they'd show up, and Maria and Arnold would show up, and every year without fail, my dad would be like, let's go talk to Arnold. So my dad would bring me up, and he'd be like, Mr. Schwarzenegger, this is my son, and verbatim, every year, it's the same fucking thing. This is my son, Michael, and he goes, oh, yes, and I go shake his hand, and my dad will say, he's actually really into, and before he can complete his sentence, Arnold goes, oh, no, I can tell. It's beautiful deltoids. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, look at your pecs. It's great. It's fantastic.
He loves to give compliments.
Yeah, you know, don't listen to you.
He won't even let my dad finish. He loves bodybuilding.
In the Born Strong thing, he loves to. Oh, so great! These guys are so strong. I love seeing them.
In Bigger, Stronger, Faster, yeah. I meet him on his campaign trail.
Oh wow!
And I lock arms with him, and the only thing he says is, "Look at them arms! Look at those arms!" And he's talking to me. It's like his arms are way bigger.
How
than
is
mine.
Tom Arnold his best friend? What do you mean?
How is that not perfect? It's perfect. My dick almost exploded like a sausage you leave in the microwave too long.
Why?
The other day,
this is the 16% he talked about at the beginning.
No.
We've done enough Swole Patrol. Now the 16%.
I have the best Swole Patrol story of all Swole Patrol stories. It was like if 12-year-old Mike saw this, his head would blow right off his fucking neck. I was at the gym at Gold's in Venice. And I'm working out. This is a weekend. I don't know, Saturday, Sunday, but it was a weekend. And it's middle of the day. Arnold shows up. And I'm used to seeing him in the morning, but he shows up and he has the same crew and they ride their bikes up. And he's like, hello, everybody. It's great. and all of a sudden I see like a commotion at the front desk, maybe 20 minutes into my workout. And I see fucking Frank Stallone walks in. He's always there.
Oh, yeah. Frank's always there.
Sly walks in behind him.
Oh, really? When was this?
Maybe 3 weeks ago.
Oh, jeez.
I know. So I'm going, wait a second. Sly Stallone just walked in. Arnold's working out. The fucking meeting of the minds is going to happen.
Do they like each other?
Oh, yeah. But I mean, that's it. That's Rambo and the Terminator. So I'm like just watching. I'm like, but I walk away from the squad rack. I'm just like watching. Sure enough, they lock eyes. And they just walk towards each other. And they fucking do the buff guy handshake. And I'm like, oh, this is everything I ever dreamed of. Look at them. And they were just in their own buff guy, old man, growth hormone world. I know.
Growth hormone world.
Yeah, we'll talk about that at a later date. I have to decide if you got a guy in here that will put me on growth hormone, I'll consider it.
I told you. I got the guy.
I can't go to him.
Why?
He's out by the airport. It's too far for me.
You work in Culver City.
I got plenty of guys who come to you and sell you growth hormone.
See? He doesn't want it sold. Legal. He just wants that prescription. That's all he wants.
No, I want somebody to tell me how to do that in a healthy way.
I don't know that human growth hormone does anything.
I don't know if it does anything in the absence of testosterone. I think coupled, it does great.
By itself, I don't know.
Doesn't strengthen soft tissue, tendons?
Maybe a little bit, but I haven't seen that much proof, like where people have been using it with, you know, it used to be 15 years ago, everybody's raving about it, but it just seems
the anti-inflammatory effects are
possibly,
meaning that if you take a 6-year-old guy who's got a bum neck from lifting weights and boxing all
for him to take it, I got a shoulder. It may be good, but have you looked into stem cells for that?
It would be great. It would be
great. Have you listened to Joe Rogan's recent episode with Mel Gibson on it?
I saw that Mel was in there.
Okay,
that
episode is awesome.
Yeah. I am
Joe a glum cunt.
I saw that.
Said, I'm going to bury you in the fucking rose garden.
Mel Gibson barely says anything. It's mostly the doctor talking.
No, but the platelets and whatnot clearly work. It's a good thing. So I was going on that path at one point. And what that would let me do again is lift very heavy weights again.
Sure.
It's limited my weightlifting. I'm not a gearhead like these guys in the Gold's Gym. I work out in my garage. That's my
but you.
I'm
that's
sure you
all you
have
need.
A pretty good gym in your garage.
How much barbell weight do you have? How much plate weight?
I don't use it anymore. I don't use barbells anymore at all. Maybe some squats, but that's about it.
Okay.
But I down there. How much my sons use it, so there's a bunch of weight down there.
But you're in great shape. Are you 10% body fat?
I have no idea. But
we could have
dumbbells,
Drew.
Dumbbells
you could be deadlifting 500 pounds in a year.
I low back and neck, man. It's bad.
But that'll help it.
How old are you?
59.
Wow. See, he looks great, man.
I saw you hitting some big numbers recently. Like, you're going back at it?
A little bit. You know, I have two fake hips, so I can't go too at it. My brother just had a powerlifting meet up north called the Super Training Classic, and so I went in that just for fun. I just deadlifted 400 pounds.
Still, for a guy in his mid-40s, that's better than 99%
but
of anyone that's ever walked the face of the earth.
To me, it's terrible.
I understand. You ever broke six?
Yeah, I've done six. Right around that is my best deadlift. My bench used to be my good thing. You know, I used to bench over 5 all the time.
Oh, my God.
Now that my shoulder is shot like Drew's, I'm looking into the stem cells and some other things to try to fix that. But it's been – you know what happened? So when I was doing drugs, I tore my tricep. And since I didn't care, for 3 years I just let my tricep hang because I was doing drugs and drinking every day. didn't really ever get it fixed or healed. Mm-hmm. When I went to rehab was when I started lifting again. And as soon as I started lifting, like any sort of pressure on my shoulder, I then tore my rotator cuff.
Oh!
Because the tricep couldn't support it. So I had a torn rotator cuff, torn tricep. I'm just kind of recovering from all that. But, you know, I have to say that like everything actually feels pretty good coming back. It's just going to take a while.
Drew often rips connective tissue in his pelvis from just all the torque.
Yeah.
All right. Driving it home, driving it home, powering it home.
I've never talked about Swole Patrol type issues this long in a single sitting in my life.
it's enjoyable,
it
isn't
is,
it?
It is. There's something about it that is like nothing else.
At Big Strong Fast on Twitter and Instagram, is there any website anywhere else people can go?
I think that's all they need.
You want to pimp out the slingshot too, though. It's a great
product. Yeah, howmuchyoubench.net is my brother's website. So www.howmuchyoubench.net is where you can get the slingshot and all the related slingshot products as well.
All right, man. Chris also, Bell, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Wait, producer, what?
Oh, yes.
The voice of God.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I like that.
We have at Swole Patrol Pod on Twitter.
Nice. Drew, we got our own Twitter. We got our own Twitter feed now.
Wow.
At Swole Patrol Podcast on Facebook.
Okay. There you go. There you go.
Hey, we're real now.
Now we know.
For real.
That makes everything legit.
I want Susan to talk in the reverb voice forever.
I don't like it so much.
Sounds fantastic.
I don't dig it. Yeah. We need some sort of aloha, mahalo sort of greeting for the end of our program.
She'd be like,
go check. No, it should be that Arnold, like... Arnold Stallone meeting. How's it?
Ah, that's great. No, it's like
Yeah, we need a hashtag. We need a hashtag.
Swole Patrol, right?
Nat King Swole. It's making people
laugh. Can't it just be Swole Patrol?
I think if we can get it, get a hashtag Swole Patrol.
Join the Swole Patrol?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
hashtag honestly,
Swole.
Thank you.
All right.
It's always a
really
pleasure
fun.
To you.
Absolutely.
Really
great talking
pleasure. You as well. Thanks for listening to Swole Patrol with Mike Catherwood and with myself, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You can follow us at Swole Patrol Pod, S-W-O-L-E Patrol Pod, on Twitter and at Swole Patrol Podcast on Facebook. Subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast. And do not forget to head over to drdrew.com to find all the Playroom Pod shows. While you're there, please click through the links to support our sponsors. Supporting them helps us do these shows. So thanks again.